Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Game sevens are supposed to be the best thing ever, right? Supposed to be the culmination of an even series, all coming down to that one last game. And the first six games of Utah-Denver were amazing. You had Donovan Mitchell going for 50-plus twice. You had Jamal Murray going for 50-plus twice. So that set the stage for a Game 7. A Game 7 that you knew was going to be an all-timer. Like the kind of shootout that none of us would ever forget. The kind of shootout that we would always talk about for years to come. That kind of a shootout. Except it wasn't that. Utah v. Denver last night was not awesome. You had two gassed heavyweights standing in the middle of the ring, throwing desperate haymakers and not landing anything. Now, as an example, look at the winning totals for the previous six games. 135, 124, 124, 129, 117, 119. The winning score last night, 80. Oof. 80. A team scoring 78 in this series meant that it was the end of the third quarter. Last night, that's what Utah had at the end of the game, and they still damn near stole it at the buzzer. Six electric games and one brutal ground and pound game. It's like we were suddenly launched back into, I don't know, like 2003 for a Spurs-Nets finals game. Half expected Kerry Kittles and Jason Kidd to come walking through that door at any moment last night. Like Utah didn't even crack 40 in the first half. Denver barely got to 30 in the second half. Utah scored 15 in the second quarter. Denver scored 15 in the third and the fourth. I mean, I get that it doesn't really matter how it looks. It's a good thing because that looked really ugly. And that's not a criticism, by the way, either, of either team. Jamal Murray had a bad leg. Both teams were flat out gassed. They left everything on the floor in the previous six games, and they had nothing left last night. It's understandable. But as bad as that game was for stretches, and again, it really was ugly, the last minute was absolute insanity. Before we get to that, how about a nod to the Utah Jazz? They were down 19 at one point in the third, and they managed to brawl and grind their way back into the game and even had a three-point lead in the fourth. I mean, that is some freaking heart. Would have been a lot easier just to tap out, to throw in the towel, take the first thing smoking out of the bubble, but they didn't do that. They kept brawling. Speaking of brawling, let's not forget that Denver won the first game of that series, lost three straight, and were down double digits in the second half of an elimination game. Same deal. Would have been really easy for them to say, man, we're missing some guys. We gave it a good look, gave it a good run. Let's get the hell out of here, though. But they didn't do that either. So what happens when you've got two exhausted but extremely tough and extremely proud teams brawling in a game seven? I'll tell you what happens. You get a final minute like the one we got last night. Rudy Gobert had a shaky first half, but he was a force in the second. Hey, remember all that talk about how Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert did not like each other after the positive tests? Yeah, it didn't seem like there was a lot of animosity between them last night. They were battling their asses off together. And then, with just under a minute left, Gobert and Mike Conley hooked up.
Cross court, Conley, shot clock at five, Conley in the paint, Gobert finishing, and we're tied.
Rudy Gobert feels like he got hit in the face and certainly did. It could have been easily an and one. Plumlee trying to contest a dunk attempt, swats him in the face.
Throw it down, big man. Not only did he throw it down to tie that game, he threw it down and got a Mason Plumlee rake to his face. The Plum Dog Millionaire gave Gobert a free exfoliation, and it wasn't called. You know, Jazz fans had to be so pissed about that. Denver calls the timeout, then they go into their big man. And before I roll this clip, let's just point out the fact that Joker is a bad man, and he's a very, very bad man in Game 7s. He's quietly put together an unbelievable Game 7 resume. And he added to that resume with less than 30 seconds to go last night.
Throws it to Jokic on the pick and pop. 2-for-1 is open. Jokic spin move to the dotted line against Gobert. Leans in. Turnaround hook shot. Got it! Oh my lordy, was that big. 80-78 Denver.
I'm not exactly sure where the Joker was going on that play. Gobert played rock solid defense. Had him locked up. Wasn't leaving his feet. And the Joker flips up that baby hook rainbow, and it worked. Denver gets the 80-78 lead. That's where the insanity really starts. Utah calls timeout. They go to inbound the ball, but Denver's Gary Harris, who had a brutal shooting night but was a glove on defense, locks up the play, forces them to call another timeout. Utah comes out of that huddle. 17.4 seconds left now, and that's where the mayhem really begins.
Donovan Mitchell spins on Harris, gets to the dotted line, lost the basketball, loose ball down to Jamal Murray. Denver's got the numbers. Off to Craig, layup no good. Rebound down to Gobert. You got to hurry. 2 seconds left. Three-pointer Conley. Missed it at the horn. Let's bring on the LA Clippers. Let's go Nuggets Nation. Come on. Denver wins game number 7 by a final of 80-78.
In case you were wondering, that was Nuggets radio. Dude, that was insane. I mean, that was Gary Harris again, tipping the ball away from Mitchell on the drive. Denver gets it, but instead of dribbling out the clock, they hustle up the floor like they're losing. And they set up Torrey Craig for a layup, except Torrey Craig misses the layup. Somehow. I mean, like, it was harder to miss that than it was to make that. And that gives Utah another chance, and Mike Conley gets a look that was way more in than it was out.
Rebound down to Gobert. You got to hurry. 2 seconds left. Three-pointer Conley. Missed it at the horn. Let's bring on the LA Clippers.
Like, how did that not go down? That touched two parts of the rim before it popped right back out. I mean, be honest with me. You thought that three from Conley was going down, right? I know I did. I knew he was going to make that shot. It would have been a perfect ending for the story, too. Misses time earlier in the series for the birth of his child. Comes back to win the series on that final shot. It would have been an insane ending for the Jazz and the ultimate kick in the package for the Nuggets. Especially when you see the replay. And it looks like Gobert had a foot out of bounds, holding the ball before passing it to Conley, and the refs never even noticed. Again, I cannot believe how close that was to going down and how close Denver was to suffering a hideous loss in the final seconds. Like, if that shot does go down and Denver loses, Torrey Craig's never going to hear the end of that missed layup. And neither is Murray for not dribbling out the clock. No wonder Craig crashed Murray's presser and tried to explain himself.
To be fair, I thought he was going to score. So...
I love Craig. I love Craig walking out and saying, my bad. Because that was his bad. But if Conley scores, that is so much worse. If Conley scores, that would have been, to use Joker's word, tragic. Man, my man had a good look. It really should have gone down. And when it didn't, Mitchell collapsed to the floor, and that's where we had that great moment where Jamal Murray went over to comfort him and pay his respects. Very cool moment. Two great players who took their games to a higher level over the course of that series, and an awesome series capped off by Game 7 that was brutal for 47 minutes and then just sheer adrenaline for 60 seconds. Now the Jazz get to leave the bubble, and the Nuggets get the Clippers, and they get them tomorrow night. No rest at all for a team that already looks absolutely exhausted. Any other team, and I would say they were finished, but not a Michael Malone team. You can never count them out. Not that crew, and not a Michael Malone coach team. Not dead can't quit. Not dead can't quit.
Let's bring on the LA Clippers!
What a wild ending.
Come on!
Come on, Nuggets Nation! The football season right around the corner, less than 10 days away. The reigning champs are set to take the field to kick off the season, and there is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To celebrate week one of the football season, DraftKings is putting you in the center of action with two shots at a $1 million top prize. Get in on all the action right now. Making it rain with DraftKings is so easy. You draft your team, you stay under the salary cap, and you pile up points for yardage, touchdowns, and so much more. On top of that amazing offer, DraftKings is also giving away a share of up to $100 million in prizes to all users who enter their free football survivor pool. All you have to do is sign up for DraftKings, enter their survivor pool, and you'll instantly get a share of up to $100 million in giveaways. Download the top-rated DraftKings app right now. Use the promo code ROME. Get a free shot at a $1 million top prize. Promo code ROME. DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Other terms and conditions do apply. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. As you may have guessed, it is Cliff Averill. Cliff, it's great to have you back. Listen, it's been a minute or two since you and I have spoken, so bring me up to date. How are you doing, and how is everybody around you doing right now, Cliff?
Yes, no, everybody's doing well. I'm doing well. The family's healthy. You know, just my motto's been just staying out the way and growing mentally and spiritually, and just continue to, you know, thrive and take care of these babies.
I think that is the best way to approach it. You know, one of the things also that you've talked about in retirement is trying to figure out exactly what you're going to be great at next. What has that process been like for you?
It's been fun. It's been fun. I can see why it's a little scary for guys, you know, because you realize, I mean, I retired at 32 years old. I've been playing football, and I was a late bloomer. I've been playing football since I was, you know, 15, so more than half my life. You know, I've been playing ball, but overall it's been great. It's been a great experience. You know, I've been doing some media work and I'm finding out that I like that. I like that perspective, being able to be that player that's been in the locker room, being able to kind of give a different vantage point, through a different lens. You know, I got some other different ventures that I'm working on, but most importantly, my foundation, you know, doing a lot of work in the community and giving back, especially during these times.
Cliff Averill is joining us. I'm going to double back and ask about the foundation in a moment. In terms of your media work, let me ask you this. What was your reaction to how things ended for Earl Thomas in Baltimore?
You know, it's interesting because Earl Thomas is a great teammate, was a great teammate, a good friend of mine still. And he's one of those guys, it's either you love him or you hate him, right? He's one of those guys that if you don't get the time to actually get to know who he is, you know, you can be on the other side of things. And I think in Baltimore, that's exactly what happened. I don't think they gave him enough time to figure out and understand who he is. He's a great dude. He's just a little different. You know, he's one of those guys during walkthroughs, he's running through, you know, he's sweating, he's drenched during a walkthrough, and sometimes that rubs people the wrong way because, you know, it's different and you're kind of going against what the norm is.
Cliff Averill is joining us. You know, so when you lay it out like that, things obviously did not end well for him in Seattle or Baltimore. The thinking was that he would sign with Dallas pretty quickly because he wanted to be a Cowboy for a while, and they seem to have an interest and need as well. Why do you think that hasn't happened yet, and do you expect him to eventually end up with the Cowboys?
I think that's the best fit on multiple fronts. One, for them, obviously, you know, their defense, they need a safety back there. But also, I mean, this man's going to wear a gold jacket at some point, right, in the next 7-8 years or something like that. So any team he goes to, any defense he gets on, he's going to change the dynamic of that defense. He's going to make that defense a lot better. And I think the Cowboys make the most sense, one, because he wants to be there, and two, they need that, right? So other than the business side of things, trying to figure out, you know, compensation and what you're going to pay them, and maybe, you know, you bring them in after week one. I don't know. There's a lot of things that come into it from a business standpoint that can slow the process down.
You know, Cliff, when you look at the situation in Baltimore, there's always this talk about culture. In fact, when you look at any team anywhere, there's always this talk about culture, right? Coaches love to talk about culture. The front office loves to talk about a culture. From a player's perspective, how important is culture?
I think culture is important. You know, I played for the Lions and I played for the Seahawks, the only two teams I played for. And I think the culture is what made the difference between winning 10 games consistently with Seattle and going 0-16, you know, winning 2 or 4 games while I was in Detroit. You know, so I think culture plays a big role. It starts with the head coach, understanding who he is, understanding what his philosophy is. and also understanding, you know, what type of players you want in there, you know, and some players, they gravitate towards certain coaches. You know, being here in Seattle, everybody hears about Coach Carroll and how positive he is all the time. That's the culture that he wants around. That's what he wants his coaches doing. And it also makes the players feel good, and they go out and perform at a high level.
Cliff Averill is joining us, breaking it all down. You know, when you speak about the secondary, how about Seattle? They bring in Jamal Adams. Do you like that fit for that team?
Oh, that's huge. That's huge. You know, the defense wasn't as good as we've been used to seeing of in the past, right? You know, those 2013, 2014 years where that defense was the heart of the team. Last year, it wasn't necessarily that. So I think bringing in Jamal Adams definitely helps out, you know, the entirety of the defense. But more so than anything, you know, they didn't get that many sacks last year. And anybody that understands it and gets it, you know, up front is the guys up front getting sacks. You know, you need a secondary that can hold off a little bit so you can get there, right? And vice versa. So going to add in a Jamal Adams, I think, is huge from that perspective. And also, he's a thumper. He's the Cam Chancellor of that defense right now. You know, he does a little bit of everything. He blitzes well. He covers the middle of the field. You know, it's going to make people think twice about throwing in the middle of the field. And you need somebody like that in the type of defense that they play.
Cliff Averill is joining us. I'm glad you made that comparison to Cam Chancellor. What was it about Cam that made him so special on the field?
Man, they call him the enforcer for a reason. You know, he's that guy that will set the tempo. You look at the Super Bowl against the Denver in 2013. You know, outside of a few other plays, you know, he set the tone for that game. I think it was I forget which wide receiver, but anyways, he knocked the mess out of him. Now it becomes a different situation. Nobody wants to run those crossing routes. Everybody has alligator arms now. They don't want to reach up for the ball because they're afraid of that hit. So having somebody like that in the middle of the field basically discouraging players to catch the ball, which is your job, you know, that's huge. That's huge to have somebody like that. So, you know, he was the enforcer for a reason.
Cliff Averill, Super Bowl champ, joining us for a few more moments. Cliff, help me with this. Russell Wilson is a 7-time Pro Bowler. He also is a Super Bowl champ. He has led the league in passer rating, passing TDs. For all that he has accomplished, not only has he never been a league MVP, he's never even received an MVP vote. What is your reaction to that, and how in the world do you explain the fact that he's never even received a single MVP vote?
It's unreal, man. I think it's unfair, too, right? Because I think a lot of people still think of Russell Wilson of early, you know, early in his career, where I guess he wasn't the focal point of the team, right? You know, fortunately for him, you know, he grew up around a bunch of guys that led the team for him, right? You know, you look at the defense, talking about Richard Sherman, myself, Mike B, I'm just long, and he didn't necessarily have to be that guy. So I think people are still kind of thinking about that. But if you look at his stats, every single year, this man has gotten better. You know, every single year he's gotten better, and I think he's only had one season where he's lost 9 games. Everything else has been 10-plus games, right? So I think people are kind of being biased a little bit from early on in his career, but he deserves to be in those talks. He's consistent. He's getting better, even in year 8, year 9. Usually people, you know, they're just great, and they kind of, you know, plateau a little bit. He's consistently getting better, and it's crazy to hear that he's never even gotten a vote, let alone won it.
It's a joke. It makes no sense whatsoever. Now, Cliff, you still run an off-season training program for pass rushers. Let me get your thoughts on this really quickly. I know you're a huge fan of Von Miller, for instance. What is it about Von that sticks out to you the most?
Man, Von is so explosive. His get off the line of scrimmage is amazing. His hands, though, I think, you know, as a pass rusher, you know, when I'm watching film or when I'm watching football games, that's the first thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for the guys on the edge and seeing how they move. Von doesn't stop his feet when he makes contact. He's great at the hand combat piece and just being able to take away his shoulder as well. And he finishes. You know, he's just consistent at what he does. And again, that's another trait that a lot of, I guess, fans or people don't put into consideration is consistency. This man has been consistent his whole career, you know. So, and that's an extremely hard thing to do in the NFL.
And not only that, but in terms of approach, that's like the most important thing anyway, right? That's the most important thing you can say about anybody. Are they consistent in the way they go about their business and the way they carry themselves? What about Chandler Jones? What do you think when you watch him and how he goes about his job?
so underrated. So underrated. And I don't know if it's because of the team or what, but he's had double-digit sacks almost every single year for, like, the last 6 or 7 years. You know, Patriots let him go, and you know, that didn't make any sense either. But, you know, I just think he's an amazing player. He's unorthodox. You know, I talked about Von Miller's get-off. You know, Chandler Jones, his get-off is actually terrible, but he's so great with his hands. He's so great at understanding what offensive linemen are going to do. He's so great at being able to knock hands down and bend the corner. And, you know, I think he's vastly underrated as far as for the recognition that he deserves in comparison to being one of the elite pass rushers in the league.
Cliff Averill, my guest. I mentioned I want to talk to you about your foundation before you left. Part of your transition from football to life after football has been the building on the community service that you always did as a player. This year you partnered with Safeway to help the Odessa Brown Children's Clinic to address food insecurity and other issues brought on by COVID. What has that experience been like for you?
You know, both my parents are Haitian. They both come from Haiti. They both are immigrants to the United States. And one thing I've learned is no matter how bad you might feel your circumstances are, you still have enough to be able to give back. And I watch my mom and I watch my dad do the same thing. And through this pandemic, through COVID, I think for me, it's so important for us to be able to give back to those, because there's a lot of people hurting right now. There's a lot of people with no jobs. A lot of people don't have any income coming in. And I think if you have it and you can help, you should definitely do so. And I think it's important, especially for these kids. You know, that's one of the main reasons I partnered up with Safeway and doing some of the COVID relief stuff is a lot of these kids depended on meals at school. You know, a lot of these kids, they weren't getting their meals because they weren't in school. And I think that's unfair. So the partnership only made sense to give back to the community that gave so much to me as well.
Now, do you know the name Brad Miller? Do you know the name Brad Miller as it associates with Major League Baseball? If you don't, that's all right. I mean, he is suiting up for his sixth team in 8 years. So if you don't know this guy, that's understandable, especially considering he's never hit over 265, never made an All-Star team, never played more than 80 games in a season since 2017. I mean, why would you know him? However, here is why the journeyman, St. Louis Cardinals infielder, deserves a committed place in your mind. Here's why you should know him. The numbers do not tell the entire story. His nickname, however, does. And his nickname is, wait for it, Rat. Find me a better handle. Find me a better nickname. Such great gloss. Especially since he rolls with it. And he put it on the back of his gamer during Players Weekend 3 years back. And let's just say the Rat had his chompers out last night in Cincinnati. And he gnawed the living hell out of the Reds. Check this guy.
Here's a swing and a breaking ball hit past Votto. Wong scores. Edmund scores. A double by Brad Miller. The pitch to Miller. He swings and lifts a high fly ball left field. Way back on the track. Aquino jumps and the ball is gone. A two-run homer for Miller.
The 0-1. And he hits it into center field. And he is driven in five tonight. Brad Miller with a five RBI night. Shift on the right side. And Miller launches one down the right field line. Oh. It's gone off the foul pole. Have a night, Miller. He is driven in seven on the night.
Have a night, Rat. That Rat went 4 for 6, 2 dongs, a double, 3 runs scored, and 7 RBI. What I'm saying is my man had his wheel of cheese, and he ate it too. Cards beat the hell out of the Reds 16-2. And now the Red Birds, powered by a Rat, have bounced all the way back from that 2-week COVID layoff, and they're in second place. Hey, Rat, go crazy now, Rat.
Go crazy now. Go crazy now. Go crazy now.
Have yourself a day, Rat. Now, if that Rat had himself a day, which he did, and I'm not exactly sure what you would call this effort from San Francisco Giants outfielder Alex Dickerson, because it was even better than that. Now, if you live in the Denver area, you might want to get inside, because at any moment this morning, 3 separate tattooed moonshots are about to return to Earth from orbiting.
High drive to right. Dickerson, it is out of here, and it's in the upper deck. Dickerson hits another high drive to right. It is out of here. Dickerson goes the other way, hit well. It is out of here. He's got a three-homer game, and it's now 16-2. Have a night.
Wow.
Have a night is right. My man is like upper tank, oppo. And are you ready for the final score? Giants 23, Rocks 5. I repeat, Giants 23, Rockies 5. Let's all take a moment to express our gratitude to the baseball gods that the Giants were not playing the Texas Rangers last night because the Rangers do not believe in their opposition scoring more than 7 runs. Ask Fernando Tatis Jr. So, the rat was good. Alex Dickerson was great. Why don't we spend a moment or two getting to the bad and the ugly? Because this was both. Now, one team that has not gotten nearly the run that they deserve is the Tampa Bay Rays. First in the AL East, second best record overall in baseball, trailing only the Dodgers. I mean, they're on a tear. A tear that the Yankees have been very much on the wrong end of. So coming into last night's game in the Bronx, the Rays were 7-1 against the Bombers. They had ripped 6 straight head-to-head. So the Rays have got the Yankees on a choke collar. But because this is baseball, nothing's ever straight up, and there's always a stupid game being played within a great game. And the stupid game between the Rays and the Yankees has 3 years worth of history. 3 years worth of history of both these teams throwing high and tight, even over each other's heads. And again, since this is baseball, nobody ever forgets and nobody ever forgives. So, the Yankees wasted no time yesterday in plunking a Rays batter in the first. Because, of course, they did. Like everybody in the yard, even the cardboard heads, knew what was going on. Now you've got both teams on edge. Fast forward to the ninth. And the scariest dude in the game since the rat himself. Remember that 6'8" rat, Randy Johnson? The unit? Yeah, well, this guy's name, the scariest guy since the unit, Aroldis Chapman. And we know that he can reach triple digits in gas. And after he ran 2 different Rays batters up and in, he did this to pinch hitter Mike Brasso.
Here's Brasso pinch hitting for Sosugo.
Oh.
Over his head.
Oh.
Behind his head. Now the umpires are getting together behind the pitching mound.
They're discussing intent, without a doubt. That was a scary, dangerous pitch.
You think? 101 miles per hour. Potentially a lethal laser. Laser that missed Brasso's dome by 1/2 inch. You think that might be potentially dangerous? Man, that's bush, that's dangerous, that's stupid, lethal, whatever you want to call it. And how are you going to make the argument that that was not intentional after the way Chapman threw to the first 2 batters? And after the Yankees had already had a beam ball back in the first? And after these 2 squads have been doing each other like this for the past 3 years? So Chapman would go on to get the strikeout and get the save. And then, of course, he had to chase all of that with a stare down. Which, of course, then caused the benches to clear. So, Chapman was allowed to finish that, despite that heater over Brasso's head. I mean, and that one, by the way, hit the backstop so hard, it ricocheted all the way up to first base. Think about that for a second. A ball thrown from the mound that travels 80 feet to the backstop and hits so hard that it caroms another 110 feet back the other way to first base. What if that ball is over or up another inch or two? So needless to say, both sides were really hot afterwards, but nobody more so than Rays skipper Kevin Cash. He decided after the game, since the umpires didn't really handle this, he would issue his own warning, and it was pretty blatant.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It was mishandled by the Yankees, certainly the pitcher on the mound. It was mishandled by the umpires. They hit Joey Wendell intentionally in the first inning. It was clear as day. Chapman comes in. He throws three different balls up and in. Enough's enough. We're talking about 100-mile-an-hour fastball over a young man's head. It makes no sense. I mean, somebody would have to tell me, go pull the numbers, who's hit who more. But I can assure you, other than the 3 years ago, there hasn't been one pitch thrown with intent from any of our guys. Somebody's got to be accountable. And the last thing I'll say on it is I got a whole damn stable full of guys that throw 98 miles an hour, period.
Look out. That's a major league manager who just said, quote, I got a whole damn stable of guys who throw 98 miles an hour.
Period.
Period. I don't know, man. That sounded like a threat to me. What else would you call it? That's a major league manager who just flexed that he's got an entire pitching staff that can touch 98 on the gun and might be headhunting this afternoon in the series finale. Here's what Yankees skipper Aaron Boone had to say in response.
Well, that's pretty scary comment. I mean, I don't think that's right at all, but I'm not going to get into it right now. Cash and I have a good relationship, and if we need to talk about things, we will.
I mean, he's right. That is a pretty scary comment. That is a pretty scary comment when you've got one manager essentially threatening to retaliate with damn near triple-digit heat. But you could see where he would, right? Because baseball vigilantism. Because baseball allegedly polices itself. Hey, don't look for the umps to do it. We don't even need that. We'll just do it ourselves the way we already have. Always have. I'm telling you. And what do you know? Never mind that they never forgive, they never forget, it all comes around. They're going to run this thing back again tonight. I'm telling you, one of these days, up and in will mean right between somebody's eyes. I'm telling you, somebody is going to leave the game in a pine box, and all in the name of baseball's idiotic code. Because they're old school. Because they need to police themselves. Because baseball vigilantism. I'm telling you, you cannot get out of the way of one that's that high, that hard, and coming in that fast.
As I got a whole damn stable full of guys that throw 98 miles an hour, period.
It, Ty Cobb called. He wants his spikes back. Dude, it's 2020. He literally just threatened them. And you can see where he was so hot, though, right? When Chapman was doing what Chapman did, because he felt like the umpires didn't handle it. Cash, I mean. Somebody's going to leave in a box. I mean, is it going to come to that? Whoa, you did not. 1-800-636-8686. Actually, Alvin, that's fair. It is time to die because somebody will.
As I got a whole damn stable full of guys that throw 98 miles an hour.
So, did you maybe go a little too hard this weekend? I got something that can help you out. Goodies Hangover Powder. What an amazing product. I'm talking about hangover pain relief at the speed of powder. Fast pain relief with a boost of alertness. I'm talking about a temporary relief from aches and pains, which are due to the hangover, the headache, the muscle aches. I'm talking about a product that's so amazing. It helps to restore mental alertness when you're experiencing fatigue or drowsiness associated with a hangover. Goodies Hangover Powder. It is the first hangover offering from an analgesics brand. And it comes in tasty berry citrus boost flavor. And it's easy to find. It's available on Amazon, in Walmart, and at your local convenience store. You see, Goodies understands that you can't afford to let a hangover slow you down. And for a hangover that's really tough, you need real medicine. Goodies Hangover is more than the natural supplements that you've seen before for treating hangovers. With a history rooted in analgesics and putting an end to tough pain, Goodies Hangover has the right formula to stop pain fast and provide a boost of alertness. Now you can have that fun night without worrying about the next morning. Goodies Hangover. Real medicine for real hangovers. Fast relief with a boost of alertness. Goodies Hangover Powder. Sonny Dykes is my guest. Sonny, it's great to have you back. It's a game week, but before we get into that, you've been around the game a long, long time. I've got to ask, have you ever had an offseason like this one in terms of dealing with a pandemic and everything else?
No, it's been a crazy 6 months, really, since you go back to May, or excuse me, to March. We were three practices into spring ball, and all of a sudden, this just kind of came out of nowhere, and And we were on spring break, and it shut us down. And really, it's just been a crazy, crazy time ever since then. You know, everything has changed in college football. You know, and we've had to adjust. And it's been a crazy couple of months. But, man, you got to give our players and our athletic director, Rick Hart, and our president, Gerald Turner, and just a lot of people, a lot of credit for getting us to this point where we have an opportunity to go play on Saturday. And really, the most credit belongs to our players just by handling themselves the right way. And it's been a tough couple of months for everybody, but really proud of where we are as a program. And just the fact that we have a chance to go play on Saturday, I think everybody's really excited about it.
I can't wait to talk to you about that matchup. And we will. SMU head coach Sonny Dykes is joining us. You know, you mentioned the players a couple of times. When you and the players are going about this, obviously the old cliche is there's no manual you can take off the shelf in dealing with something like this. I know you and your players have also had a lot of conversations and about doing the work in the area of racial injustice. What's that process been like for you, and why was that so important for you to commit the serious time that you did to take care of that?
Well, number one, I think it's, you know, our players live that every single day. You know, young people, and in particular people of color, obviously, you know, live with this every single day. And our guys are passionate about trying to enact change. You know, and the thing that we've done as a coaching staff really is provide a forum to our players and listen. You know, we've had a lot of Zoom meetings, really going back to April, and as all these things have played out, and just where we get on a call and just talk, and we've learned so much about their perspective and the way that our guys feel and what they think and why that they believe and view things the way that they do. And it's really been incredibly enlightening for all of us as coaches, for all of our players, all of our white players, quite frankly, have had to really do a lot of self-examination and have a lot of uncomfortable conversations. And we've really benefited from it. It's been a great thing for all of us. I think it's been something that's been incredibly unifying for our team. You know, I'm 50 years old, Jim, and it's been great for me just to kind of get a different viewpoint. And I've tried to just sit back and listen as much as I can, let the players drive the conversation. And I think our players, you know, are like everybody else. They're frustrated. But I think our guys are committed to actually trying to change something and to try to have an objective to elicit some kind of change and create a better future for all of us. And, you know, I've got young kids. I've got an 11-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old daughter, and a 3-year-old son. And, you know, I want a world where, you know, everybody's viewed the same and everybody has the same opportunity. And so it's been a difficult time to be a college football coach, but it's also been just a really great time to learn and a great time to, you know, learn a new perspective and to, you know, like I said, examine ourselves and the way that we view the world.
SMU head football coach Sonny Dykes is joining us right now. Very well said. Now, I know you're focused on the future and you're not going to spend a lot of time looking back, but when you have a season where you led the program to 10 wins and the highest ranking since the mid-1980s, just how significant was that for the program, Sonny?
Well, that's big for us. I mean, when you're not in a Power 5 conference, you know, you're always fighting for credibility. You know, that's the whole thing, is I think people dismiss your program probably much more than they should. We have a really good football team. You know, we have a chance to have a really good football team. We've got a lot of good players. We have a lot of players that could play at any program across the country. You know, our guys are really talented. You know, I would put our wide receiver core up against anybody in college football. I just think we've got a lot of depth, a lot of speed, a lot of unique talent. Big guys, small guys, quick guys, just guys that can do different things. Very deep and versatile group. And we got a quarterback, you know, and Shane Buechele coming back, you know, who's been successful at the very highest level. You know, he was a starting quarterback at the University of Texas as a freshman, and things didn't probably play out the way there that he wanted them to. And he came here and really changed our program last year, and we're excited to have him back. And, you know, I anticipate him being one of the most productive players in college football, and quite frankly, one of the best players in college football. I just think he means that much to our program, and he's that good of a player.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, Sonny, when you look at Bushell, he threw for nearly 4,000 yards. He was first-team all-conference. And when you consider what you have coming back, the weapons at wide receiver that you mentioned, also a tight end, you've got experience on the offensive line, like, what does the next level look like in terms of Bushell's growth?
You know, I've been fortunate to be around some good quarterbacks, you know, all the way back to my days as a GA at Kentucky. We had Tim Couch, who was a red, Jared Goff, obviously, at Cal, was the first pick in the draft. And so I've been around some good ones. Had Nick Foles, and I was a coordinator at Arizona, who obviously went on to be the Super Bowl MVP. So I've been blessed to be around some good quarterbacks, and Shane's up there. I mean, he really is. I mean, he's that kind of talent. He's that kind of impactful player. You know, he's very, very consistent. Just his approach day in, day out is as solid as anybody. And so, you know, I think, again, when you put him into the group, as you said, returning offensive line that I think has really improved, and around those skill position players, you know, I think we have a very high ceiling. You know, I think that the thing for us, we've got to kind of retool our defense a little bit. We lost a lot of guys up front. You know, we've got a lot of speed on defense. But for us, you know, the level of our defense is really going to determine, you know, whether or not we're playing for a conference championship or potentially a New Year's Six bowl game.
We're talking to Sonny Dykes, SMU head football coach. You know, when you talk about things like that, when it comes to recruiting and building the program, how different is it when you don't have to sell somebody a vision, but you can point to these results, like a 10-win season or being in the top 25 or going to bowl games? How significant is that in recruiting?
Yeah, well, look, we got a lot to sell here. I mean, you know, when you look at SMU, I mean, it's an unbelievably beautiful campus right in the middle of Dallas, Texas, which is one of the fastest growing economies in the country. It's got a great academic reputation. It's, like I said, a beautiful campus. It's got a good history of football. Now, you got to go back a ways, but the history of this football program is really strong, particularly, you know, early 80s when you go back to the Pony Express and those teams. Those were some unbelievable teams. And so we've got a lot to sell, but as you said, I mean, I think the most important thing you can sell is, you know, is credibility. Going back to that word again, just being, you know, knowing that if you come to SMU, number one, you're going to have a chance to win a conference championship and play in a New Year's Six bowl game, and you're going to have a chance to compete at a high level. You're going to get a degree that's really going to pay off for you the rest of your life, and you're going to have a great experience. And, you know, those kids that come to the school here, they love going to school here. It's a fantastic place to go to school. And we just want to continue to build our brand and so that we can become, you know, a program that people respect nationwide.
Sonny, it's amazing in the sense that, as I mentioned, this is a game week. After this wild offseason, how good does it feel to prepare for an opponent on Saturday? And does it feel like there's almost a sense of normalcy now?
You know what, it does. It really does. For the first time, I think, going back to March, things are starting to feel a little bit more normal. You know, we took a COVID test this morning. You know, we tested all of our players and staff. We'll test them again on Friday. We just took another one on Sunday and had no positives. So, you know, as I said earlier, I'm just really proud of our players, how responsible they've been, how unselfish they've been. You know, when you go back to college, you know, part of the ritual for college kids is they go back and they have a good time, and they party, they get together, they do things. And, you know, and our football players have had to stay in their rooms and have had to, when they go out, to make sure that they social distance and that they wear a mask and, you know, do those things to try to keep themselves safe, which in effect keeps their teammates safe, which in effect allows us to play football. And so, you know, they understand how important it is to be unselfish. They understand how important it is to make those sacrifices. Otherwise, we're not going to have a football season. And, you know, we talked about this. We're one of the three big games on ESPN Saturday. There, you know, in Saturday's really the big college football kickoff, and, you know, what a tragedy that would be if we were unable to play because, you know, we had a lot of sick players. And so they've done a great job, and again, my hat's off to them.
No, it's a great opportunity, and they have to concern themselves with something bigger than themselves. I know you've had that conversation with them. So when you look at Texas State, what concerns you the most, and what are you hoping to see from your team specifically on Saturday?
Well, I think, you know, number one, Jake Spavital is the head coach here. Jake's a really sharp guy. You know, Jake was my coordinator 1 year at Cal. He's been a coordinator at Texas A&M. You know, Jake's going to find a way for them to move the football. They just are. They've got a new quarterback that I think they're very excited about. You know, Brady McBride, I expect him to, you know, to really kind of understand the offense and really to be able to execute it at a high level. And so we'll have our hands full. You know, as I said earlier, we're having to retool our defense a little bit. We played well at times last year. I think we led the nation in sacks, you know, and pressures, but we've got to do a better job giving up fewer big plays. You know, I think we've improved our speed, which is going to help us, but we've got to figure out a way to get some stops Saturday. And then, you know, offensively, we just got to go execute. You always worry about that early on, just your ability to make routine plays and to be able to, you know, string good plays together and move the ball. But again, we've got a lot of guys coming back, a lot of big play potential, and so I'm excited to see how we play Saturday.
It is so good to talk some football in terms of a matchup itself. They're coming off a 10-win season and a bowl appearance, led SMU to the highest national ranking since 85. He is the head coach there, Sonny Dykes. Sonny, great to have you back on. Good luck this weekend, and I'm anxious to see how the team looks. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, Jim, good talking to you. I'm a big fan and appreciate it, and hope everything's good in Southern California.
All right, so this show prides itself on relationships. In fact, not to give it away, but that was a big topic with Dahani Jones. Makes me laugh. Like, I always think about this professor I had in college. I've told the story before, but it just makes me laugh. I remember this guy said when I was at UC Santa Barbara, a poli sci professor, he's like, let me tell you something. Let me tell all of you kids something. A new bike is not going to change your life. And I thought to myself, the hell it won't. I got mine stolen last week. A new bike would change my life. He said, a new bike's not going to change your life. It's not about that. It's about relationships. I didn't get it then, but I do get it now. And Dahani and I talked about that. It is about relationships. This show is about relationships. And we've had some really good ones over the years. I mean, I don't even know where to start. Dana White, great relationship. Bob Myers, great relationship. Steve Elkington, great relationship. Aaron Rodgers, great relationship. I mean, I could sit here all day long and list off the people who continually swing through year after year based on a relationship. And they always show up a certain way. I love it. It means the world to me. Now, one of the best relationships on this show is with Minnesota Gophers head football coach, P.J. Fleck. And it goes way back. If you've listened to this show or watched any of my TV shows, you've either heard or seen him as part of the program. If you listen to him on this show, then you know that he starts off every single conversation with a trademark greeting, which I absolutely love. P.J. Fleck, I've been waiting all week to ask you this, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing elite, man. I'm doing elite.
I'm doing elite, Jim. Thanks for having us back on the show.
I'm doing elite, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show again.
I'm doing elite, man. Thanks for having us back on the show.
I'm doing elite, Jim.
Jim, it's a pleasure being back on your show. We're doing elite here. Thanks a lot.
I'm doing elite, Jim.
I'm doing elite, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show.
I'm doing elite, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show, man.
I'm doing elite, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show again.
In other words, doing elite is PJ's thing, and it's a pretty awesome thing to be doing. How many of us can say that we're doing elite all the time and mean it? So not only do I love it, I got to admit I'm a little bit envious of it. Because if I were to say to you that I was elite every second of every day, I would be lying. PJ is not lying. He is doing elite. Again, we're talking about a guy who put Western Michigan on the map. He rolled that into a super challenging situation at Minnesota where he has been absolutely murdering it. Ran off those 11 wins last year. Smacked Auburn in a bowl game. Hell yes, he's elite. Elite as they come. My man can coach. He is pure, unadulterated, unfiltered, raw motivation. You cannot help but respond to it. So, it's no surprise that a local pizza chain in Minnesota called Red Savoy had PJ strap on the headset and step into the living room of some unmotivated, lazy couch surfer to whip that loser into ordering some pie in a TV commercial that is so utterly and outstandingly PJ Fleck.
PJ Fleck.
That's right. And I'm here because it's noon, lunchtime, and you're still sitting here in your
pajamas.
PJs. So we've had a slow start. So they've counted us out. But they don't know this team now, do they?
No.
They don't know the character of this room. That we can order hot, delicious pizza right there from your phone and right there on the couch where you love to be. You've earned that right to have soda-style pizza delivered right to your door. You are Pizza Elite.
I am Pizza Elite!
Become Pizza Elite. Red Savoy, soda style since 1965.
Did my man just drop the phrase, Pizza Elite?
You are Pizza Elite!
Man, he sure as hell did. And who would not want to row that boat through a sea of marinara sauce for that guy? Man, I told you this guy could coach. I'm not even going to say that he can act, because that was not acting. And I mean that as a compliment. That was just PJ being PJ, being elite, just motivating, just finding that thing that somebody will respond to and using it to get the best out of that guy. Like that dude in his pajamas at noon who desperately needed to be coached into picking up his blower, to order a soda style pizza.
Red Savoy, soda style since 1965.
Notice voiceover guy and I are saying soda with a T and not soda with a D. Soda with a T is shorthand for Minnesota. And I just learned with the rest of the world that not only can somebody be pizza elite, but that Minnesota apparently has its own style of pizza. Like, we know about New York style pizza. We know Chicago style pizza. We know Italy has a version of pizza, right? But Minnesota? That's news. That's news to me. That's news to me, and that's news to the news. Because the local Minnesota news team on Channel 4 did not know it either. And they had one of the more truly bizarre conversations about soda-style pizza not long after, when they passed around a box of Red's Savoy.
Red Savoy's is embracing its St. Paul roots by declaring itself Minnesota-style pizza. It says that style is thin crust, square-cut pizza with loads of cheese and toppings.
See if I have this straight. Thin crust, square-cut pizza with loads of cheese and toppings. In other words, you mean pizza. Listen, if the square cut is what makes it, quote, soda style, then Little Caesars and about a million other pizza places are going to want to have a word with Red's Savoy. Because that ain't exclusive to Minnesota, not even close. But it gets even less convincing when one news anchor asks another what she thinks of when she hears, quote, soda style pizza.
When they say Minnesota style pizza, Esme, what do you think of? Is this the Minnesota style pizza?
I guess so. I mean, to me, I think the ultimate Minnesota style pizza is the frozen pizza, the Heggies, the lots of matzah.
Yet not exactly a ringing endorsement when the authority, you know, the local news person, thinks of frozen pizza when asked about soda style. Hey, what do you think of when you think of soda style? Well, I think of frozen pizza. So is there anybody on Channel 4 who can make a case that soda style pizza is actually a thing?
I never put any thought to Minnesota having its own style of pizza, but I grew up eating Angino's in Maple Grove, and that was the same kind of thin crust. You have to have the square. The square, see the square, it's a stronger structure to hold all the cheese, which of course is a staple as well.
Holy crap. She went there. All right, like, that made no sense whatsoever. After admitting that she had never thought of Minnesota having its own style of pizza, she then goes with some, like, bizarre physics claim that a square cut is, quote, this is a quote, a stronger structure to hold all the cheese.
Square, it's a stronger structure to hold all the cheese.
Yeah, so that's not true at all. It's not like cutting a pizza in squares instead of triangles all of a sudden is going to change the composition of the dough or somehow fortify it by any means. Listen. It's really important to me. You know, I do not want to get on the wrong side of the Midwest. I love that portion of the country. I am a landowner in Wisconsin. Maybe I'm missing something, but it seems to me like, quote, soda style is just a little bit of catchy alliteration and not really a thing at all. because putting cheese and toppings on a pizza and cutting it in squares does not make it soda style. It makes it Little Caesars. And no disrespect to Red Savoy, which I'm sure is amazing, but the last thing anybody in the pizza category wants to be compared to is Little Caesars. Like, if I were to go home tonight and I were to cut my pie into, I don't know, heptagons and rhombuses, did I just make Jim Rome-style pizza? And Minnesota, dial me in. Help me out here. What am I missing? I don't want to get on the wrong side of the nicest people on the planet. However, I also don't want to start calling square-cut pizza soda-style pizza either. Not when every pizza joint in the world will square-cut your pie upon request. Now let me go full circle. Full circle is PJ Fleck is elite. And he was pizza elite in that commercial. Now I'm hungry. You can cut that pie any way you want it. I'm ready. Mission accomplished. My man can coach football, and my man can coach pizza.
You are pizza elite.
Man, you are. He is. 1-800-636-8686. Yeah, I know it's marketing. I know it's branding. Come on, man. Stop the lies. Is there such a thing as soda-style pizza? I mean, that doesn't make you a felon, but it might make you a liar.
Good night!